Hello and welcome to the Green Bay Outdoors Podcast. My name's Kyle.
I'm AJ.
I'm Jeff.
I'm Ryan.
And I feel weird, not only because this is our third time trying to have this conversation, it's because we're not wearing headphones right now for the first time in a podcast because Ryan set us up with a new system to live edit.
Yep. Yeah. So typically what we would do is we would just hit record on three different cameras and the mixer and then go to Final Cut and edit it all together. I thought to save everybody a bunch of time, we would try to live edit. So AJ's got a Stream Deck in front of him with a bunch of buttons, and he can switch between all the different angles, give him a pop.
Yeah, like pop around.
Go crazy.
Yeah.
You go crazy.
Go crazy. Yeah, you hit the pink one, which is the mess up button for the other show.
So we're editing live, we're recording live, and then hopefully in the end all we have to do is upload it.
Yeah, so the real goal for this was a time saver because we were eating up a whole day editing every podcast for AJ's time, and it was just a waste. But now with this system, it should really lower that down, except for what we have to cut out, like when he farts or whatnot.
Well, and it's weird how different it is not wearing headphones. I'm much more like, obviously we're doing a podcast. Obviously we're being recorded, except for that one time when AJ didn't push record just now. But normally we're here recording, and yet I feel very weird about, I'm very aware that we're being recorded right now.
Right, right.
It's, the room feels bigger. So I don't
you
like
feel,
it.
You feel safe when you cover your auditory.
I was going to say, with the headphones on, like the talking is like, not to sound weird, but more intimate. Like it's right in your ear. Yes.
You know what, Jeff, though? Like, I know you don't feel like you're in a safe, you're not in a safe space anymore. And I was actually watching Netflix the other day, and there was a dating show on there. And there was a guy with very similar issues to what you're having, where he had to put headphones in, like at a restaurant while on a date with a girl because the noise
on the spectrum,
was
I assume.
Yeah. And
love on the spectrum.
It's weird how much you come up when we watch that. But it was rough. It was actually a pretty funny scene.
He did his best.
He didn't get a second date.
And that
though.
Poor girl, though,
she's a trooper.
She wanted to just talk the whole time, and he was not having it.
You know, the one thing about that scene, I don't know those people's names. Do you?
I know Connor and Tanner. They're my favorite.
Though, that's not him though.
No, he was a one-off. He was just there for the date and that was it.
Okay. Well, his one-off date, it was really funny too, because I caught it, but she didn't tell him she wasn't interested until they decided that he would pay the bill. Yeah, I did notice that.
She knows how to work the system.
But yeah, so everybody that always asks us how we do things, if you ask us how we do the podcast, Ryan just explained it. So now if you text me or call me or email me for advice, I'm going to say you should watch our podcast more often, and you've hurt my feelings and I can't help you now.
Yeah. And the amount of time the investment of time to go into this, to figure it out, I can't imagine the average Joe who decides to start a podcast is going to do this.
Good luck.
I would also like to thank you for fixing my mic. Since we've moved into this studio, every time I've had to hold the mic still or it would drift on me over time and I like get it just right and then have to keep moving it. So like everything in me wants to be touching it right now while I'm talking because I'm assuming it's getting away from me. So I appreciate
the way I fixed it too.
I'm very curious.
It's stupid how simple it is.
Dang it.
What I did was I took a sheet of paper and it's like it's that knob that just slides down into the hole. Mm-hmm. I just put a piece of paper over it, and then the knob that goes down into the hole, I just shoved it through there to make the gap tighter.
Oh, extra friction.
So, yeah, okay. There's friction in there.
That makes sense.
Wow.
I went through with a screwdriver and tried to undo and redo all of them to see if I could really tighten it down, and that did nothing.
Same. So, but a piece of paper will work.
Yeah. The other thing about it is I've noticed that not wearing the headphones, I like – feel myself like reaching for them
when readjusting.
We have another series coming out soon, which I'm going to talk in a minute, but I don't wear headphones on that series either. And at the end of it, every time I was done, I like go to take headphones out. Cause when I'm done in this room, that means you take headphones off.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. And I do actually want to dive into that a little bit. So we have been working on something for, I want to say 9 years, and we've been working on it through road trips where we listen to like really cool, mysterious things. Especially AJ and I, Jeff more so, Ryan not as much, but kind of.
Yeah, when I'm stuck in there.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's just not like that's not my thing.
All right, so mine and AJ's thing, and Jeffrey's too, I would say.
I watched Unsolved Mysteries growing up.
Yeah, we like the pyramid. You know,
what's it actually for?
Yeah, what is it? Well, it's an energy source, obviously, or generator, if you
with
will.
Those pillars,
but yeah, so like we like pyramid shows, we like things on aliens, we like things on. I don't like the Bigfoot ones because they never catch it, and if they would have caught it, I would have heard about it on the news before you aired it on A&E. You know what I mean?
It's like a really washed out story.
Yeah.
The footage isn't blurry. He's blurry.
I tend to side with the dimensional beings now as opposed to when I was younger.
Oh.
They're shapeshifters.
That's why he's blurry.
Time benders.
And they chose a hairy
Bigfoot
ape?
Bigfoot is?
Yeah.
Bigfoot's a time shifter?
Hey. That's part of it.
I the one that I don't get into is the Bigfoot one. That's how I feel about him. But nonetheless, those types of topics, like we grew up in Michigan where we had the Michigan Dog Man, where we had, you know, like all these cryptic legends, but also
I never really heard that story before you.
Really?
Mm-mm.
I have a friend that's a parent witness or
He thinks he's seen it?
He thinks he saw it over there by out in like the Linden area.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I always thought it was something the further north you go, the more you hear about it. I've never heard of something down near here.
Yeah. Well, I am an expert on it now.
Yeah, you are.
Basically, every episode of this show, it's going to be called The Wilderness Chronicles, and we believe that this will be the last podcast we record before that comes out. I'm not going to say the exact date, but it's probably in the description on this podcast.
Yeah.
But the first episode is on the Michigan Dogman and also the Beast at Bray Road, which took place in Wisconsin. And, you know, it goes back to 1804, and I do a deep dive into everything that is the Michigan Dogman and the Beast of Bray Road. And I teach you about, you know, different stories of people seeing it, why people believe it, you know, earliest documented accounts. And I give my feedback on it on whether I think it's real or not. But the Wilderness Chronicles is a bit hard to describe for me. I find myself struggling with the description of it without being like kind of like this and kind of like that. But how would you describe it, Ryan? Because you edited one of them already.
It's like I don't know. We recorded it, like, the funness of it comes with, like, we're interviewing you from, like, a bunker.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you're getting the secret information mm-hmm. from you, and you're almost being interrogated.
Mm-hmm.
But you're giving like real life counts of like the stories that had happened, and then really bringing reality into it near the end of like, okay, what's the real deal here?
Sure.
I've been trying to pin what category you would put that under, and I can't. I don't know what it is.
It's its own thing. I like to describe it as like, it's kind of creepy. It's kind of mysterious. It's very informative. It's entertaining. It's very Halloween night watching it. It's
also podcasty,
sort of. Because like the setting, there was a show that has a similar setup, but has different topics. And that's they focus more on like aliens and things like that. And that is the Y-Files. I've always been a fan of that show. And we took some ideas as far as like how to set up and present the information from there. What was the other show? That we liked growing up, the one you just mentioned a minute.
Unsolved Mysteries.
That's we kind of took one. That in.
We got to get you in a trench coat and some fog.
We liked the Ancient Alien show. Mm-hmm. We liked, I like that.
There's a bunch of them on YouTube.
Yeah, there's like those types of feeling shows, but we wanted ours to be a little bit creepier, but a little bit cooler, and also not have to focus on like crazy things like everything's aliens, everything's Bigfoot. Instead,
yeah,
some of them are real. So the first one will be the Michigan Dogman. The second one is on crocodiles.
Some of them are confirmed, and some of them are unsolved.
Sorry. So like the crocodile one, for instance, you know, we're talking about three kids that were in Australia that went for a muddy, you know, went mudding on bikes and dirt bikes and quads and stuff like that. And they went to the river to go swimming to like rinse off after. And when they did, the one guy got attacked and killed by a crocodile. This is a true story. And the other two kids had to climb up a tree and hide in the tree for like a day until a helicopter came in and was able to get him out because no one could go in the water because the croc was still right there. Every time they move in the tree, come back to the surface with their friend in his mouth. I mean, so it's like, but then we dive into like crocodile numbers, how much they've increased since they've gone into the Protection Act, how people can protect themselves, fun facts about crocs. And like the editing that the team has done on this is so good. That it just, I love the pauses. I love the sound effects. I love the B-roll. I love the footage. I love the story. I love it all. And I think it's something that will bring in a new audience to the brand. You know, you're going to have the weekly podcast from us still. You're going to have the vlogs from us still. We have a whole nother season coming out on History Channel. We'll have another whole season next year. We also now have this series. We also have the how-to videos. So we're pumping out so much content and interacting with our audiences in so many ways. But this is such a unique thing that there's people that might not have any interest in hunting or fishing in the outdoors that are going to find the Wilderness Chronicles pretty darn cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We should play the intro for it too.
So that's the intro to it, which is you did a good job on that. It's creepy.
That was fun.
It was
very neat.
Creepy.
Yeah.
When we had initially talked about it, I didn't know you were going to put our building in it. So when I first saw that come down for the first time, I was like, wow, that's really cool.
Yeah. That is
for the people who don't know. That's our little cobblestone office. In Fenton.
The studio.
How did you get that? Is that like a picture that you just manipulated, or did you like make that?
The house? No, yeah. I went across the road and took a picture of the house and then photoshopped it.
It looks very like created in like a kind of drawing esque. It's got a little cartoon vibe to it.
I did put like a cartoon filter over the top of it.
Okay,
it's pretty stinking cool.
Yeah.
Another episode that actually AJ and I worked on together that we recorded today. Another one was on dinosaurs in the Congo. So there is a legend, but more a present day legend, I guess you'd say, is like. There's these different tribes in the Congo, and the Congo is roughly the size of Florida, and there's tribes there, and like getting around is impossible. So like if you want to go a mile away, it would be like walking through knee deep mud in the thickest forest you can ever imagine. Just constant brush. You can't see 2 feet in front of you. And they're like, you could go 100 yards and get turned around so much you can't find your way back. It's that thick and everything. So these tribes are separated by that. They live off the land, they grow crops, they fish, they hunt, that sort of thing. It was kind of cool too. I was watching some interviews in my research, and I work really hard on these videos. Like Wilderness Chronicles, I work really hard to deliver like a lot of different perspectives and a lot of different information, do a ton of research to do it. And the longest part is probably writing them. But once I get that done, I stumbled upon some of the interviews that had been done with people that live there, and they're like, what was the greatest day that you can remember? And every single person was like, the day I successfully hunted this and got to feed everybody. They're like, that makes you the celebrity of the tribe that day.
That's funny.
Which I thought was kind of cool. But anyhow, these people are separated. You know, it's like the size of the state of Florida, and they're separated by that much. So they rarely see each other. They don't speak the same language, and they don't always get along, right? So they're not communicating.
Right.
And these explorers went, this is in the 1980s, and they went and they sat down with these people, and they're like, hey, have you seen this before? And they're like, yeah. They show them a gorilla, and they say, yep. Then they show them a rhinoceros, and they're like, we don't know that one. That's not here. So they're like, and then they show them a dragon, and they all start laughing. And then they show them a dinosaur, a long-necked dinosaur. What's the word?
Sauropod.
Sauropod. I kept stumbling over it, and I want to make sure I say it right on this. But a sauropod, it's like a long-necked animal that you could see in Jurassic Park eating leaves off the top of trees.
Oh, those giraffe looking ones?
Kinda.
Okay.
But it's a sauropod is a group of dinosaurs, so it's not a specific one.
Okay.
So there's different sizes and stuff, but they all have that shape that you're thinking of.
Let's say I was thinking Brontosaurus.
No. And so anyhow, they like passively just had this one in there and they go, Yeah, we have that one. And the thing is they went around to all these tribes that don't communicate, don't talk to each other, don't interact with each other at all. These people don't have Google. They don't have dinosaur museums. They don't have picture books. Most of them don't have electricity. And they have no reason to lie because this dinosaur was just randomly inserted inside all the other things. And when they didn't know something, they said they didn't know it. When they saw a fire-breathing dragon, they were all laughing. But when it came to that one, it was just like, yep. Gorilla. Yep. We got that one. We got that one. And that was really, and these are tribes that don't communicate with each other. You know, they're talking to three different tribes.
That's weird.
You know, and so that is like, okay. And then they're telling stories about it. They're like, he's extremely aggressive. That part, we don't go to this part. We don't go to this river, this river, this river, this river, because that's his territory. Like, we do not go there because that's a good way to get killed. And they're like, well, how come you guys, like, no one's tried to kill it or capture it or something? And the elders were like, because we don't want to die. Why would you knowingly go into danger to prove something that we already know is true? So it's like they're so matter of fact about it. Like, and it's cool because it wasn't very hyped. And the two guys that went, the two explorers, were so removed from like the fame and stuff like that. They were like, all they wanted to do was document it. That's all they wanted to do. They didn't care who saw it. They were just doing it, like, document it for themselves. Guy was out of the University of Chicago. And it was just like following their journey and explaining that to the audience in the Wilderness Chronicles, and also giving my feedback. But that one, I will tell you, just giving you a glimpse, a shimmer into the episode, it is not far-fetched to believe that they're there.
So I don't want to ruin the video or anything. Sure. I wasn't part of the filming.
Haven't even heard it.
Nothing. It makes me wonder if like the test they did with like the chimps, where like they have a group of chimps and they put a pile of bananas in the middle of the room, and anytime one tries to go get one, they hose them all. And then they introduce a new chimp into the arena.
Oh yeah.
And then when that new chimp tries to go get the bananas, all the ones that have been there that get hosed down know it's bad to touch those bananas, stop him and go, don't touch those bananas. And before long, it's an entirely new group of,
because they're replacing one for one each time.
They keep replacing them, and then so the original group is gone, and then you have this whole new group that doesn't touch the bananas, and they don't even know why they don't touch the bananas.
They just know if they do, all the other ones will beat them for it. None of them had even ever been sprayed when it was all said and done. Mm-hmm. It was the original group that had been sprayed, wasn't even part of it.
You find that a lot with humans too, with recipes, where people will do, they'll make a recipe and they know to do this and this and this. And then it's like, well, why are you doing this particular step? And well, it's part of the recipe. And then they track the recipe back to the grandma, and the grandma's like, oh, well, I only had a pan that was this big, so I cut this part off of the thing in order to fit in the pan. And then everyone else had different sized pans, but they were still cutting the thing off because it didn't fit in grandma's pan, so they were doing it too.
And they didn't know why they were doing it. They just knew grandma did it.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if there's an element of that in this where it's like they did deal with something, and maybe no one's seen it. I don't know.
No one's seen it since. So nobody goes to that river, because it's actually funny you say that, because one of the accounts, one of the younger boys was saying, he's like, I've never seen it, but my grandpa did. So no one from our family has ever gone to that river again.
Right.
You know, so it's like that. But I will tell you what's interesting too. One of the points AJ and I found was in the Congo, the environment there, and I've heard this from a few different sources. I did not put this in the Wilderness Chronicles because I had trouble confirming it, but they're saying that the Congo was the only place on the planet that wasn't completely impacted by the ice age. Like, it was able to stay like intact and lush. Hmm. I don't know whether that's true or not. I found conflicting sources, but a lot of people are swearing by it.
Hmm.
So the other thing is the soil there is really acidic and it's super moist. It rains all the time. So they're saying like it could be like 5 years and a full grown elephant, all remains would be gone, bones, everything. So it's like, because one of the big fights is like, really, well, we would find fossils. Well, no, you wouldn't. You know what I'm saying? Because it would decompose so fast there. So that's another thing. The other thing is just getting in there.
Yeah.
I do kind of a rendition and breakdown what it would take for me to go from right here in Michigan all the way to where that dinosaur would be. And it's a journey that I walk through in Wilderness Chronicles. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah. That's cool. I'm excited to see that one.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you're excited to edit it because you're going to. But Ryan will make it look good. So just know all I did was talk and research. But that episode is really neat. What's the other one that we did today?
Sharks.
Yeah. What did you think of that one?
I like that one a little more than the Congo, just because they're
because I could say all the words.
Because as of the last couple of years, there has been some more sightings of sharks kind of going up into the freshwater areas, and which is kind of the premise of it. to where I could tend to believe to buy that over like evolution or generations, and then one group of sharks has the ability to go upstream to the into fresh water, and then who knows what's gonna happen in 100 years, and then. But the Great Lake bit, it's funny. It's catchy. It makes you wonder, because we've been down there, it's an aquarium. So
right.
I wonder, like, if you take a shark from, we'll say, Tampa Bay, and just, fly him up as quick as possible and drop him into Lake Michigan, like, what happens?
What's
like,
he going to do?
Is the water acid, or is it, like, going to swim and then die?
I break that down. The main episode, the title of it is, I guess I don't know the title of it, but the theme of it is sharks in freshwater. And, you know, the first opening scene talks about a shark that was found 1,700 miles from the Gulf of Mexico. It went up the Mississippi.
The Mississippi?
Mississippi. Hmm. 1,700 miles.
Jeez.
So it's like, and that was in 19, I don't remember what year. But it was early.
Like early 1900s?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I know 1916 was the one, Matawan Creek, where a bunch of people were killed.
Good memory.
Five people were attacked in 12 days, and a few of them were in fresh water. And they ended up cutting open the body and finding like a little boy inside the shark that he had gotten eaten. And then when a guy went in to try and save the boy, he got hit too. And then fishermen were catching the sharks and opening them up and finding like human remains and stuff. And it's in fresh water.
Jenna's got a weird fascination with sharks lately too.
Well, good. She's going to love it.
So Jenna was reading that, like, say you're in the ocean out on your boat and you see a shark like floating belly up. I guess it's all hearsay. What you do, that people will kill the sharks because typically humans will gas up in their stomachs, and then that's a strong indicator that they've eaten somebody. Is
oh,
floating their
really?
Belly up?
Oh,
no kidding!
Huh.
I never heard anything like that.
That's what she was telling me. So,
we're like the ice cream and red meat of the eaten
area. The gout of the shark.
Yeah. Does anybody else get toots from that? Beyond that, though, the episode itself dives pretty deep into, you know, bull sharks and their capabilities. They are able to change the way that they process salt in their liver and kidneys, and because of that, they're able to survive in fresh or salt water. And then diving into the Great Lakes thing was kind of fun too. Is like, could they survive? So I kind of go through the process if they could or couldn't. And that's what's fun about these Wilderness Chronicles, is there's stories that we can tell that we wouldn't necessarily tell in the podcast, we wouldn't necessarily tell in the vlog, and we wouldn't necessarily tell in the show. Definitely not the show. It would be impossible to deep dive into it. So this gives us an opportunity to kind of talk about all the things we talk about anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a sneak peek at the first four episodes. But we plan on releasing five in a row, I think every Saturday. And then after that, we'll release one a month on the first Saturday of the month. So Mondays will be podcasts every week. Fridays will be vlogs every week. Saturdays will be Kyle Files, is what we call it secretly here. Mm-hmm. But Wilderness Chronicles. And obviously our History Channel series is coming out in September. Yep. So kind of a cool, we're going to give you everything.
A lot of content.
A lot of content.
Big spread.
The Greenway Outdoors is brought to you by Ram Trucks, built to serve, and by Bass Pro Shops and Cabela's. Your adventure starts here.
Onyx Hunt. Know where you stand with the number one hunting app. Savage Arms, where better comes standard. Boss Shot Shells, premium grade and American made. Nosler Ammunition, a step above the rest. And by Carlson's Choke Tubes, the only choke tube we've ever used.
The best way to connect with the outdoors is to get outdoors. From setting up trail cameras and tending food plots to getting to your spot before dawn, at every point of the hunting season, a Tracker Off-Road ATV or side-by-side can be counted on to get the job done. Enjoy American-made quality and the great outdoors without breaking the bank. Tracker Off-Road, built for the love of country.
Introducing Renegades, the all-new and American-made semi-auto shotgun from Savage. Made for shooters who put performance above pedigree and don't follow the crowd. From stock to muzzle, it's built to cycle without fail and without compromise. That's the Renegades way, only from Savage, where better comes standard.
Another project that we've been working on is actually helping our friends at Boss Shot Shells with a new shotgun load that they have coming out. And the new load is called Boss Target. And there's another one coming out soon that's a game load. We can't tell you too much about that one, but the Boss Target loads were really fun to work on. And I'm a total nerd when it comes to shotgun shells, as well as bullets and ballistics and studying the gels and all those sorts of things. And what was really cool for me was, you know, I'd grown up when you shot target loads, a lot of times it would be lead. Sometimes there were some non-toxic options, but it wasn't too common. And being able to dive in and see how these shells are developed and actually work with Brandon hands-on and see what goes into it, there are some really cool things that I wanted to share with people, because it seems as though online there's a lot of misinformation out there and people that just don't quite understand a steel load for target shells. So Boss Target, what's really cool about it is if you have 1 ounce of shot in a shotgun shell and it's steel, you're going to have substantially more pellets than you're going to have if it was lead. And the reason being is because steel is far less dense than lead. Therefore, you can put more pellets in to get to the 1 ounce mark. So what you're going to find is you're going to have fuller patterns. The other thing is, you know, people shy away from steel because of like knockdown power. Like when we're talking about hunting upland or waterfowl, if you can hunt with bismuth or copper plated bismuth or tungsten, you're going to have a lot more knockdown power downrange, because the metals are far more dense than lead, meaning they can hold their energy longer. It's the same thing of like, you can throw a golf ball a lot farther than you can a wiffle ball, right?
Yeah.
So that is kind of like the mentality behind it when it comes to, you know, shooting ducks and that sort of thing. But when it comes to a clay, you can barely get to the target and touch it and it'll still break. You know what I mean? You're just trying to break clay. So really the main thing you're looking for is you want to have a really good pattern. And where steel excels is, number one, we went down to 7 shot. So for the target load for Boss. So the 7 shot, as far as like knockdown power, if you will, at distance, it's going to behave a lot like a 7.5 lead would, as far as distance downrange breaking clays. So if you can hit, you know, with your choke and your gun set up and you're shooting clays at 45 yards with lead, and that's like the distance you're willing to go, if you, with 7.5s, if you go down to the 7s, you're going to be able to do the same with steel. So that, go ahead and clip that theory from yourself, but you're going to do it with more pellets. And the other thing is, that we were talking about choking it, how to choke these different, shells, with your, you know, as far as choke tubes and steel, you can tend to be a little bit more open than you would be with lead. And one of the reasons for that, too, is that steel is a lot harder than lead. So it's going to fly a lot more true. So when the pellets are going downrange, they are not going to deform the same way that you're going to find that lead does. And when lead deforms, it causes more drifting because it's not a perfect ball anymore. So while it's shot out of the gun, it's going to drift more. It has slightly more density, but realistically, the 7.5s and 7s are going to perform the same anyways. But that deformation is going to cause more strays to go away and not be in your pattern. So with the steel, you're going to have more pellets in your pattern. And on top of that, you're going to have the same knockdown power downrange. And on top of that, all your pellets are going to be in your pattern. And like we were doing patterning videos when we were shooting their promos and stuff, like doing all the videos and stuff. Holy Hannah. I mean, you were having like no stray pellets. They were all on the paper. And like I said, you might want to go a little bit more of an open choke, but you can hit anything on a 5-stand. You can pretty much do anything. And you know, with any load, if you're going out past 50 yards, even with lead and stuff like that, things are going to get a little bit hairy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But for shooting 5-stand, shooting all those things and being able to do non-toxic, it's pretty cool, especially for those who are going to different areas where you actually have to use non-toxic because you're just flinging clays and shooting them.
Yeah.
You know, this obviously protects those people, but make no mistake about it, this is like a competition load. Now, steel, because it's harder, people worry about the fact that it's going to destroy their barrels. And as a lot of people know with duck loads, that's a fear. But that typically only happens with like 2s and BB shot and stuff like that. You're not going to find that happening with the 7s and 8s that Boss offers, because they do offer 8s as well. I talked about the 7s. They have 7s and 8s. That's not going to happen with those. But also the WAD technology that we have at Boss is actually going to help protect your barrel because it's thicker. And so they added more material to it to protect the shot going through the barrel to protect your barrel. So that helps as well. And it's cool because the WADs are made here in Michigan. The steel is sourced in the United States of America. They're doing everything right here. Everything's built here. It's like really cool to see a Michigan company thriving and coming out with this new product. And I thought it was going to be more expensive than it ended up being. And I think a lot of people too, like, you know, they used to be able to buy a box of Gun Club for like $8.99. It's just not the case anymore. Mm-hmm. So a lot of shells, you know, steel is going to be more than Boss because we're running about $15 a box. But it's going to be a lot more if you're going to look at other brands because we've got that direct-to-consumer model.
Well, even so, like growing up, a really common round we used was like the Remington 2¾, 7 or 8 shot. In comparison, now to Boss, now going non-toxic. So with Boss, you have non-toxic steel versus Remington. It's only a dollar difference per box. So, I mean, it's really comparable.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
And if you're anything like me, you need more pellets in your, you know, spread. One thing, too, I will say this, though. I remember patterning some of those old lead loads. And I'm not picking on them because a lot of people think that we're anti-lead. That's not the case. I mean, I wouldn't want my employees to be touching lead. I wouldn't want my employees to have that on their clothes and go home to their families. So personally, I wouldn't manufacture lead. But I'm also not trying to stop everybody from you know, using lead, especially in bullets for, like, rifle animals and that sort of thing. But at the same time, it's like, I remember seeing the patterns and like, I'm like, a clay could have fit there. A clay could have fit there.
Yeah.
And like with these Boss, I just tell everybody, like, try the pattern, see what you see, and then talk to me about it because it's really impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like because of what Boss is doing, like people are extra hard on them. And it's also the same people who haven't really used the products. Like, they need to get out there and pattern it with their gun before they can spout off.
Well,
they're so quick to spout off.
Well, that's the thing, too, is, like, there was a guy on there that was like, lead is going to drift less than steel. I'm like, well, what studies did you do? Because we did studies. Like, we see what happens. So that's not true.
Right.
You're wrong, and here's why you're wrong. Mm. And they're like, no, not buying it. I'm like, okay, well, I don't know. Okay.
You're that guy.
Yeah, yeah. And I too, is like, there's a lot of people that live and die hard with Boss. I think in the waterfowl industry, everyone has to use non-toxic.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, yeah, use Boss. Like, cool. Mm-hmm. But then, like, if they have the opportunity to use lead, there's almost like this thing where people are like, they know people don't want them using lead, so they want to use lead because they know people don't want them to use lead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I sympathize with the fact that people should be able to do what they want, But the people that are complaining to Brandon about not producing lead shot for Boss, I think is a bit ridiculous, because his whole thing is like, I won't do it to my employees. I know what it does, and I won't do it to them. Well, because it would be easy.
Like, the other element of that too is that what we've talked about is like, say you're doing a roast and you're doing a rabbit roast and it's full of lead, and so you're just cooking lead into your food.
You know what's really funny too?
No one ever talks about that, but that's a little gnarly.
Dude, that gets me.
The diehards might say, yeah, do it.
No, they do. They do. Mm-hmm. They do it. Their whole thing is like, well, never kill me before. And it's like, I get that.
And they love cigarettes.
But I of course I want cigarettes in my sandwich. what do I look like, a Mary? So what they'll actually do is the scientists did a study, and they were like, how much lead shot does it take to like kill a bird? And what they were finding for like Tweety birds and stuff like that, or they did say a grouse, but I haven't seen the grouse study, but they're like, if they pick up one 6-shot pellet and put it in their crop, they're going to die.
That's crazy.
One lead 6-shot pellet. So I'm like, okay, if it's going to kill, and there's people, no, it won't. Well, they did it and they saw it, but regardless, mm-hmm. I can't believe we're arguing if lead is healthy or not. We know it's toxic, but anyhow,
it's like masks.
Dude, it's crazy. To be clear, we don't like masks. just the way you said it, I want to make sure that was clear. You can walk outside with a mask on, and you can breathe when it's cold out, and you see the air. Those particles are huge. Fire is small. Doesn't make any sense. Anyways, now we're going to get demonetized for this.
Yep.
Just don't say anything about 19 or anything like that.
Or 20. 20.
Yeah, 20, 21 even. And yes, the certain people, it's 25. But anyhow... Yeah, so the lead shot, the birds can consume and it'll kill them. So when you think about it, let's say you shot a rabbit and he's got 15 lead pellets in him because you're a great shot. You cook it in the crock pot and it's just soaking in there all the time. Mm-hmm. And maybe you spit some out. Maybe you don't. Maybe you swallow some of them. You can't convince me that's good. We're so close to the Flint water crisis. We know what happens when lead is in the water. Mm-hmm. Imagine if lead is also in your food. I just don't get why there's like such a hold on that. As far as rifle bullets go, I know that Nosler makes a really great copper bullet. They call it the E-tip. They don't really push it too much because they don't want people to think they're anti-lead either. But what's really great about copper bullets is they help you kind of punch above your weight, and I'll explain why. Lead bullets, when you shoot them, they deform, which is great. Like, you want that mushrooming, but they also fragment a lot, and you might lose 15 to 20% of your shot in the penetration process, meaning it's going to fragment and spin off. Very, very normal. The thing is with the copper bullets is you won't have any loss. You have 100% retention through the animal. And the problem with that historically was it used to just punch a hole in the animal and it wouldn't expand properly. Mm. And because it wouldn't expand properly, a lot of times you just punch that little hole and the animal would get away, or it would take a long time to die. Now Nosler has figured out how to make the E-tip like, you know, mushroom perfectly, create absolute devastation, which we've done a video on showing people what that looks like, but absolutely destroyed them. And it had 100% retention through it. So think about that. If you're taking a young deer hunter hunting and he's going to try and shoot a big buck, but all he's got is a 243. Yes, a 243 is big enough, relax. But a 243 is a little bit underpowered, you could say. Mm. A little bit. Like, it doesn't have a ton of chutzpah. You better hit the vitals, right? Not that you shouldn't hit the vitals every time. I know, everyone relax. But
you can tell we've been.
I know. I've been through that. I've been beaten enough on this.
I like that in the last 30 seconds, you've made one very simple statement, and yet we're going to get crap from both sides on that one topic.
I know, but I'm fixing it. I'm fixing it. I'm fixing them with truth, logic, and common sense. But anyhow, if you have a bullet that holds 100% retention, then it's almost like they're shooting a bigger bullet. Mm-hmm. So it helps them with a little bit more knockdown power, with a little bit more bullet weight to help them punch above their weight a little bit. And that's what's so great about the E-tips from Nosler, and also copper in general. And copper is a pretty incredible metal. It's obviously not quite as dense as lead, but with 100% retention and holding its shape, it's going to be really interesting to see what copper can do as we continue to move forward with other products at Boss. So
it's a lot like the recipe thing we just talked about, where it's like, Who cares what the bullet is made of? You should care about how it works and whether it performs when you use it. But no, lead's good enough for me because it was good enough for my daddy. And it's good enough for me, and you can't tell me otherwise.
The good news is now you're going to be the target. And I also sympathize with the fact that people feel as though, like, for instance, the waterfowl stuff. We've talked about this before when they made using lead shot illegal. People in the waterfowl industry were like, this isn't fair. You're trying to just get money out of us. It's a game to get more money out of us. Because steel shot's going to be more expensive. Bismuth's going to be more. Tungsten's going to be more. And now, to this day, that's still kind of the mindset of like, no, I want to use lead shells because they're cheaper. And even like the discussion with the Boss shells, you know, with the new target loads, people are like, lead is cheaper. I'm not doing it. And lead's better. And lead has great performance attributes. There's a reason why people have used it for many years. And there's great bullets that are made of lead that we use for Nosler. I don't have much of a problem with using a lead bullet for big game. I really, really don't. Matter of fact, a lot of times I do. I'll use the E-tips. I like the different loads from Nosler. Obviously, the AccuBond is like one of their...
Sorry, people. We're working through the kinks still.
Yeah. I obviously like the Nosler AccuBond and those bullets. And because, you know, typically a rifle bullet's going to go through and through the animal, or I can cut out around where the bullet impacted, and I'm not going to be cooking lead inside the meat and that sort of thing, I don't have a problem with using lead bullets for that. I don't. So
it's crazy we have to defend eating lead.
Yeah.
Like, that's in its simplest form, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, and I just think it's obvious to me that there's other choices. If I have the choice, I would just simply go non-tox. And at the end of the day, I know that thing about the six shot. I know the studies. And I would rather not, even when I'm shooting target loads, I just think non-tox, I just rather go non-tox. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to also fault people for like being obsessed with lead the way they are.
Yeah.
Because I get it, man. Like, listen, I'm very pro Second Amendment, obviously. It's not hard to figure out what side of the aisle I sit on when it comes to politics. It's like, we're Christian conservatives, like, we get it. I also don't like the idea of anyone telling us we can't use lead. I don't like that either. So it's like, I get it. Star Spangled Banner, yes. However, I would also say that you should probably have all the information because we know lead is toxic, period.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's part of our stance too, typically on most issues is, yes, we tend to lean one way, but if there's just clear evidence mm-hmm. that you can't argue with, then that's just the way it is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, so that war is probably going to wage on. For me, the reason why we switched to Boss long before we worked with Boss was because I liked the idea of shooting the copper-plated bismuth for even small game. Jeff and I do a lot of squirrel hunting, a lot of rabbit hunting and stuff like that. It's like, I always find pellets. I'd rather mm-hmm. not cook them with lead in them in the crock pot with the roast, like you were saying. I just think that's kind of the better idea.
That cooking segment we just did a couple weeks ago on the podcast and on the vlog, you know, you take a couple really small segments of those squirrels we shot, and even with cutting up the meat and preparing it the way I did into little tiny chunks, yes, there was bits of bone, but like you found a pellet.
Copper-plated bismuth, baby.
You know, so it's like, it's if you found one in a very small chunk, like it's going to be throughout the animal. I would much rather that be non-toxic than...
Sometimes I eat copper-plated bismuth just because. Yeah. I'm fine.
Yeah. It's good for your teeth.
I start twitching. But yeah, so that was a battle that I kind of wanted to announce. And there's going to be more announcements coming from Boss that are very exciting. We're honored to work with them, a Michigan company with people that we care about and love. So it's been fun kind of helping them with their marketing initiatives and creating content for them. And thank you for listening to me talk about this load. Go check it out, BossShotShells.com. And it's the new target load. Absolutely love it. Stand by it. But what's funny is I don't necessarily know when you guys are going to see this, but it's probably when I am sitting in Africa mm-hmm. hunting or fishing or exploring or shooting a rhino with a dart from a mm-hmm. helicopter in order to tranquilize it and cut off its horn so it won't get poached, and learning about the conservation of those. Or I might be in Kruger National Park working with elephants, or I might be hunting impala or gutting them with AJ, or making jerky with Jeffrey and mm-hmm. then giving it to impoverished people that otherwise might not get to have meat, which is going to be really exciting. Or we might be on e-bikes riding to the ocean so we can cast from shore and dive and spearfish. Or or maybe, just maybe, we'll be floating on some crazy lake in the middle of the nowhere fishing for giant tiger fish with teeth the size of Jeffrey.
And when we say we're tiger fishing, we're fishing for tiger fish. We're not fishing for tiger.
You're supposed to say
that's not it. You're supposed got really, really, really strong fishing poles, and you put a T-bone steak on a hook.
They call it jungle fishing.
There's a jungle cat in the bathroom. Alan, put your pants on. I find it weird I had to tell you twice. That's from The Hangover. It's been It's been coming up on my algorithm a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jen and I just watched that the other night. She watched it for the first time last week.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did she enjoy it?
Yeah, she loved it.
So she watched it last week and again? So she's watched it twice now?
No. That was it.
Okay. So yeah, we're excited about the Africa trip. It feels surreal. We leave Monday. I am nervous but excited. I think we have thought of everything. So we've probably not thought of nothing. But we got some really cool new equipment, and we're going to push our skills to the limit and hopefully create the most dynamic episodes for the History Channel that the world has ever seen. I think we will. But thank you so much for tuning into the Greenway Outdoors podcast. We hope you'll follow along for our journey. Check out the Wilderness Chronicles, as well as our podcast, our vlogs, and heck, maybe soon you'll get to see, actually definitely, just in September our show comes out on the History Channel. You'll get to see those Africa episodes and a lot more too. Thanks so much for tuning in, and stay green.
And I again, would like to formally apologize to anyone if there's any quality issues in this.
Yeah, sorry.
But I think it was good.
Sorry, Ryan sucks.